Litcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Hello, I'm Julia Sherwood and I'm your host for Litcast, a series of interviews about Slovak literature. Today, my guest is Donald Rayfield. Hello, Donald. Greetings from London.
Hello, Julia. Greetings from the wilds of Kent.
How are you? And how are things in the wildest Kent?
Still locked down, but we have a large garden, so it's endurable.
That's wonderful. Okay, before we launch into it, let me first introduce you to our listeners. Donald Rayfield is an emeritus professor of Russian and Georgian, whose books have been instrumental in expanding knowledge of Eastern European literature and history. In 2003, he was honoured with the Order of the British Empire for services to Slavic studies. Donald is the author of books on the history of Russian and Georgian literature, including numerous studies, biography of Anton Chekhov, a book on Stalin and his hangman, the tyrant and those who killed for him, as well as a comprehensive Georgian-English dictionary. He has translated, among others, works by Osip and Nadezhda Mandelstam, Anton Chekhov, Nikolai Gogol and Varlam Shalamov, as well as books by Georgian and Uzbek writers. He is also a publisher, founder of the independent publishing house Garnet Press, specializing in Russian and Georgian books, but also featuring some Slovak authors, and a literary reviewer writing for the Times Literary Supplement and the Literary Review. I'm really pleased, Donald, that you have agreed to talk to me for this first edition of Litcast Slovakia. When I started thinking about who to invite, your name was among the first that popped into my mind for several reasons. Primarily because Peter Piščanek's Rivers of Babylon trilogy that you published in Garnet Press must be the most successful Slovak book in English ever. The second reason is personal. You gave me my first break as a literary translator with Daniela Kapitáňová's Sam Kotale's Cemetery book. However, in your academic career, you specialised in Russian and Georgian literature and history. You have also translated widely from these languages, and the books published by Garnet Press, with the exception of Rivers of Babylon and Sam Kotale, were also translations from Russian and Georgian, as well as dictionaries and history books. So how did you get interested in Slovak literature, and what was it about these books that appealed to you to make you publish these two or rather four books?
Well, this goes back a long way. When I was at school still, specializing in German, I got rather fed up with the Germans and their attitude to the Slavs. I deliberately started learning Czech. I got a lot of help from a lecturer in Czech, and then when I was 15, I cycled to Prague, made a friend there, and took it quite seriously. Only when I got to Cambridge University did they tell me that I was an idiot to specialise in Czech, not knowing the great Russian language. When I was at Cambridge, this was the early 60s, Slovak was considered a small side interest to Czech. And we did a couple of terms of semesters of Slovak, and I remember quite well Vyacheslav's Krvavé sonety, the sonnets of blood, and a rather nice romantic, modern romantic, Ivan Krasko. But that was, as far as I was concerned, sideline to Czech. I had to abandon Czech. This was just as well for me, or I'd be unemployed. Because my friend in Prague was arrested for political dissidence and I was blacklisted and I couldn't go and do postgraduate studies in Prague. I wasn't even allowed into the country until 1990. Nevertheless, every now and again, about once in 20 years, I was called upon to participate in some conference on Czech or Slovak. And my next contact with Slovak was when I was in Budapest, of all places, doing research in the Neprajzi Intézet. And I was getting bored with my research, and I found that the State Library had a wonderful collection of recent Slovak novels. And as there was a conference on modern Slovak prose, I thought, well, I might as well read some. And this time, Slovak literature was much more interesting. We had, I remember particularly Tjaški's Amen Maria, about the Slovak rebellion and the collaboration with the Russians. And I was particularly struck by Jan Johannides, Marek the Groom and the Hungarian Pope, which I thought was a remarkable novel, though it was a very difficult one to read with my level of Slovak. And I disliked the most popular Slovak fiction, I think Jarosz's Tisíc ročná včela, the thousand-year-old bee. And I was still invited to a conference and wrote an article on historical novels in Slovak and Georgian, contrasting them and realizing how important historical novels are for small nations with a history that's bigger than their present. And then I sort of lost contact with Slovak until, oh, about 15 years ago. Rajendra Chitnis, a specialist in Czech and Slovak and Russian, was defending his PhD thesis in London, and they needed an external examiner, and they called on me, and one of his subjects was Peter Pischanek, and I was lent a copy of the last volume of Rivers of Babylon, The End of Freddy, Freddy Hukonjec, and for the first time in my entire academic life, I was rolling about on the floor laughing. I thought this was one of the funniest and most inventive things I have ever read. And I then went on to read the first one, Rivers of Babylon. And
which is even better.
Which is superb. Yes, that's a perfect novel, even if it's not quite so fantastical. And I thought, well, this must be published. And so I went round various publishers and they said, I said, this is the most important book about the transfer from socialism to capitalism, from one sort of mafia gangsterism to another sort of mafia gangsterism. It explains how a village thug becomes an oligarch and how a car park keeper becomes a national hero. And they hummed and hawed and said, we'll look at it in 6 months' time and we might commission a translation sample and so on. And I got fed up and I thought, this is very wrong. There's something wrong with British publishing. They can't recognize something when it hits them between the eyes. And I was going to Georgia to finish our work on the dictionary. And I arranged to see Peter Pischanek and I met him in a hotel. And he was a little bit suspicious. And I said, look, I've tried to get a publisher. I can't, but I'll do it myself.
Sorry, you met him in a hotel in Georgia?
In Slovakia, on where we went to change via Vienna, took the bus to Bratislava, and talked to him there. I said, you won't sell many copies because I'm a small publisher. I do academic things. We'll be lucky if we sell 1,000, but at least it'll be something. And he agreed, and it went from there. And that was quite a success by standards of a small publisher, one-man operation, with no marketing. We managed to sell, so far I think we sold 1,300 copies and we came seventh on the prize list for the Independent Foreign Literature Prize. So I was very pleased with that. I think the main thing for Pischanek was not so much being translated into English, is that once you are translated into English from a language like Slovak, then other countries take an interest. And so from the English, I think there's a Turkish version, there was a Hindu version, and so on. Unfortunately, we couldn't sell the second and the third volume nearly as well. I suppose they are in some ways inferior, but Pischanek struck me as utterly remarkable, quite unlike any other Slovak author. For one thing, he's an anti-nationalist. For another, he has a skill of I would say he's like Quentin Tarantino. He has a skill of getting very, very complicated plots done in a cinematic way, one episode after another, and tying them all together. I like Quentin Tarantino. He was perhaps too fond of violence and too obsessed with sex, but those are minor defects, I think, in a brilliant writer. So it was a commercial success.
That is really amazing. And what about Samko Tale?
Samko Tale, you suggested that to me, and I thought it was a remarkably original work. It's very short. But the thing about it sticks in your mind, and in fact you understand it. At least I found I understood it about 6 months after I'd published it. You realise what's going on in the mind of the idiot and what the idiot has actually done. I thought it was absolutely brilliant work. That sold more modestly. I think we sold 500 or 600 copies. That shows an originality that is something quite new. There's something about the Slovaks I'd compare to the Scots, that for a long time they've been regarded as a sort of inferior sub-tribe of the Czechs, just as the Scots have been regarded as sort of a peculiar sort of Englishmen. But once they get going, they reveal that they have far more talent and far more spirit. I mean, I'm very fond of Czech literature. I think there are great Czech novels, but the Czechs are lugubrious and heavy compared with the Slovaks at their best.
Well, that's really nice to hear. And so, what other Slovak writers do you admire, and who do you think should be translated into English?
I quite enjoy some of the modern ones, Velikovsky, the late Velikovsky, and Balla, and so on. But I think the outstanding writer is Johannides. I don't think I would take it on myself. I think it needs a professional publisher. I think if Hilary Mantel can be a success with Tudor history, I don't see why Marek the Groom and the Hungarian Pope should not be an equal success. I mean, he's a different sort of writer from Hilary Mantel. He doesn't do dialogue much. He's not all that interested in psychology. He's a lot more interested in philosophy and symbolism. But I think he's a writer of comparable talent. And I think that's the one Slovak treasure that really ought to be translated and published.
Well, there is a chance that one of his books might be translated, but I don't want to just tempt fate, so I'm not going to tell you anything more at this stage. But I hope to be able to make an announcement about this later in this program.
I look forward to it.
To come back to Garnet Press, you haven't actually published anything for a good few years now. Why is that?
No, actually, we did publish last year a
Oh,
selection
good.
of the poetry of Vaše Pšavila, who is Georgia's greatest poet writing around the beginning of the 20th century. That came with some beautiful illustration work, woodcuts and so on by Andrei Semeiko, three long poems, a number of lyrics. So that's been out, but it hasn't had much attention. It's very hard to get things like that reviewed, particularly verse. There are other reasons why I published less recently, since about 2012, I suppose. I've been translating a lot myself, and that takes a lot of energy. And the other reason is that I've been translated too, and that takes even more energy. I'm not sure which is worse, to do it or to have it done to you. But collaborating with a translator is often hard work. And it's good work because the translator often finds things wrong with the original that you can put right. The other reason is financial. I'm lucky to being an academic with a pension, so I don't have to make a profit. I think it's impossible to make a
Yes.
profit unless you're very, very lucky. If I ever discover the Slovak Elena Ferrante, of course, that would be fine. But these things happen very rarely. And the finances are helped by the fact that the Literarne informačne centrum subsidizes either translation or production. But it's extremely difficult to get books reviewed and noticed, and into bookshops is almost impossible. All you can do is sell on Amazon. The other thing is the Garnet Press is run under the auspices of the university, and financial regulations have now become so tight that although I earn money for the university, getting that money out of the university and distributing it to authors, to translators, it is such a bureaucratic hassle that I've given up in despair. So anything I do in the future will have to be self-financing. A lot of publications have been financed by the Georgian English Dictionary, which we've nearly sold out, and is an enormous heavy volume. Brings in quite an income, or has brought in an income, and that has subsidized the Slovak and the novels and the Georgian novels. But now that's sold out, and heavy dictionaries are no longer popular. People want them online, so that dictionary is going online, and our source of income is disappearing too.
That's sad. Yes, and most publishers really can survive by mixing highbrow literature with something that really sells well. So yes, it is understandable. Now, you're also a prolific translator, and In fact, the last time I saw you was one of the very last events I attended before the shutdown, and that was your presentation on the second volume of Shalamov's Kolyma
Yes.
Diaries. Now, it can't have been easy to translate these really, really harrowing stories. So do you think that this Gulag experience still has relevance for present-day readers?
I think they should be reminded about it every generation, because people forget quite how horrific that past is. It's like Holocaust. It has to be taught in schools. And Shalamov is as good as any history course, simply because in Russia less and less is written about it or spoken about it. The younger generation doesn't even know about it. So I think it's important to keep going. Shalamov isn't difficult linguistically to translate. He's a very straightforward writer. But you do get nightmares, nightmares of wheelbarrows and people being shot and freezing to death and so on. It was not a pleasant experience, all the hell. I'm glad it's over.
And what about your translation of Hamid Ismailov's The Devil's Dance? So you actually learned Uzbek for it, but presumably that was a more fun experience to translate?
I'm not sure about that. When I first saw the text, Hamid gave it to me in Russian. And I thought, fine. And I started reading it. And then I came across some Uzbek poetry in translation. I thought, this cannot be a great poet. I will have to work out the original. It's a poet called Chulpon, who is a sort of Uzbek Mandelstam, a very, very fine poet at his best. So I managed, you think if you know Turkish or some Turkish, that Uzbek will not be difficult. And that I found was a big error. The odd thing about Uzbek is that although it's been under Soviet influence for so long, it is much richer than Turkish. Atatürk cleaned up Turkish very thoroughly. The Soviets left Uzbek pretty well alone, so it has a lot of Iranian in it. It almost slips into Farsi sometimes. It has a lot of dialects. Absolute nightmare. But the worst thing was that I realized that the whole translation was a terrible translation into Russian by two ladies, one of whom was a Russian who didn't know any Uzbek, the other was an Uzbek who didn't know an awful lot of Russian. And they'd made up passages, they'd left out page after page where they didn't understand. And so I thought, well, I'll have to do it from Uzbek. And that was the steepest learning curve I've ever had. So I got through it. Fortunately, Hamid is alive and can answer questions. Otherwise, there would have been points at which I would have despaired.
Right. So it was a huge challenge linguistically, but in terms of the content, it wasn't as harrowing as Shalamov.
Oh, no. I think, well, it has a Gulag aspect to it. Half of it is about the writer about to be shot, and the other half is what he would have written if he hadn't been shot. But it's done very wittily, and it's combined in a very clever way in two parallel stories that actually intersect at the end. I think it's the best thing Hamid's ever done, so I was very happy to be associated with it. The only problem for me was the editor decided that it would be much better if it was much shorter, and she took a butcher's knife to it.
That's a shame.
I'm hoping that one day it'll come out in full in English rather than this four-fifths. But I've learnt as a translator you must have a contract in which you insist that nothing is changed without your permission.
That's a very good warning. Thank you. And what are you working on now? Has the coronavirus pandemic affected your current projects and future plans?
No, the only way it's affected is the whole of the publishing world seems to have gone to sleep.
Yes.
Nobody's commissioning anything. Nobody's replying to any emails. They're all in a state of despair. What I've been trying to do is to get a new edition of my biography of Chekhov, which I wrote in 1997. And it's been translated. It's always being updated in Russian and in French and Chinese, and it will be in Spanish. But I can't get the English edition updated because an American publisher has been hanging on to the rights. So I've been spending months getting those rights back, and I found, fortunately, that the American publisher hasn't paid for the license for the last 14 years. So I think I'm on the verge of not only getting the rights back, but a small amount of compensation.
Oh, wonderful. So, well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Hope that we will see this updated edition soon and that we will meet again at some other literary event.
Certainly, yes.
And so, in the meantime, keep healthy. And yes, I hope to see you at the next launch when the pandemic is behind us.
Yes, and let's hope to see Johannides in the review pages.
Yes, let's hope so. So thank you very much, Donald. Thank you.
And thank you, Julia.
Good luck to you, and I wish you good health. And the same goes for all our listeners. Please take good care of yourselves and your loved ones. And let's hope that good literature will sustain you in these difficult times.
I'll join you in that.
Bye.
Goodbye.